Okay, we're beginning with the Mishnah on Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Batei chatzirim notnin lahen koch yafeh shibibatei arei chuma, koch yafeh shibisadot." When it comes to houses that are in unwalled cities, so far we've dealt with houses in walled cities. We've also dealt with fields, steachuza. Now we're dealing with houses that are in unwalled cities. What is their din? So the Mishnah says that they get the benefits of both batei arei chuma, the houses in a walled city, as well as the benefits of stei achuza. Therefore, nigalim miyad, they can be redeemed immediately, as opposed to a stei achuza, we have to wait 2 years. B'chol shnei masar chodesh, this seems to be extraneous, because obviously if you can be goel miyad, and we're going to see that you can be goel afterwards, then what's the point of mentioning shnei masar chodesh? I think it's just mentioning it in contrast to the stei achuza, and the Shnei Masar Chodesh that's relevant by Batei Rechuma. But that little piece there probably doesn't have a lot of meaning. Kibbatim, similar to houses where you're allowed to redeem it, and you're allowed to redeem it for the entire 12 months. V'yotzim b'yovel. But on the other hand, they do get released in the yovel, u'bigiron kesef, and with a reduced purchase price that you can be put at them, kisadot, like fields. So they have the benefits of both ways of redemption, which is that the seller of a house in an unwalled city has rights to redeem it immediately, which is what Batei Rechuma, the advantage that they have. It also has the advantage that they can continue to be redeemed even after 1 year has elapsed, and they can be redeemed at a reduced price per year. They spread the price or purchase price over the remaining years to the Ovel, and they get it back in the Ovel like a Stei Achuza, unlike Batei Rechuma. So you get the benefit of both of them. Tanrabanan, Al Stei Haaretz Yechashev. So that's the pasuk that we find by the Batei Chatzirim, which is, after it speaks about Batei Rechuma, it says, U'batei HaChatzirim, asher ein lahem chuma. If you have batim that are in courtyards that do not have a wall, saviv, al stei haaretz yechashev. They'll be classified like the fields out there, which would sound like they are stei achuza. Ge'ulat yelo, you have the right of redemption, u'biyovel yetzei, and it goes out in the ovel. So now the Braita is going to break down each one of those pieces of the pasuk, which it says, "Aseret yichashev hekishoa katuv l'sadeh achuza." It makes a hekesh to tell you that the houses from unwalled cities or houses in general have the same din as a stei achuza. Mas stei achuza yutze biovel ubigiron kesef. Just like a stei achuza gets released in the ovel and also can be redeemed along the way with a reduction of the purchase price per year. Similarly, the batei chatzirim have the same din. They're freed or released in the ovel, and they get the reduced price when you amortize the purchase price over the number of years, and then, depending on how many years have elapsed, you can redeem it at that reduced price. Well, then the Gemara asks, similar to what you were suggesting, so now, if you're going to model it after the stei achuza, then give it the rules of the stei achuza completely, which means that a stei achuza, you have to wait a minimum of 2 years and leave it in the hands of the purchaser. So Talmud Lomar, that's what the next line in the pasuk says, is gu'la tielo, that he has the right to redeem it miyad, immediately. So that's why you have gu'la tielo, that gives you an extra right of redemption, unlike the stei achuza, which has the requirement to wait 2 years. Here you can redeem it immediately. Hoyel, v'natatalem koach yafeh shebesadot. Now that you've given them the benefits of stei achuza, v'koach shebebatim, and you've given them the power of the batei arei chuma, you got the benefits of both of them, yocho lo yitzei biyovel. So you would think, since it has so much power in terms of its redemption or ability to take back the property, maybe in the yovel it would not be released. Talmud Lomar, that's the last line in the pasuk, ubi yovel yitzei. Then in the yovel it is released. And the Gemara says about this, my kamar. What exactly is the Braita saying? The first two pieces of the Braita are a little clearer. The last line in the Braita is a little bit more difficult. Why would you have a Havamina that in the Ovel it won't go out if it has the benefits of a Stei Achuza? A Stei Achuza is released in the Ovel. So why would you suggest over here that it shouldn't be released in the Ovel? So Amar Rav Huna makes a suggestion that almost in Enu Inyan Lemichira, Tzneu Inyan Magdish, which is Lo Nitzricha, Ela Magdish, Bayit Vibatei Hachatzirim. The case where a person is makdish, the house, in an unwalled city. V'ga'alo acher miyad hekdesh. And then a third party comes and buys it from hekdesh. Pagabel Yovel Bishanashtiya, and then the Yovel hits during the second year after his purchase from the Gizbar. Lamai Midamitle. So now, which of the two models that we've said so far are going to be impactful over here? We have a case where he's makdish the item. The Gizbar now sells the item out to a third party. So the person who's purchased it from Hekdesh, we have two models, which the Gemara is going to say in 1 second, of what happens. By Batei Arechoma, we saw in yesterday's daf, that if he holds it for 12 months after he purchased it from the Gizbar, it's chalut. It becomes his permanently. The buyer gets it permanently. We saw by Stei Achuza, if you're makdish it, and then a third party comes and buys it from the Gizbar, then when the Ovel comes, that property is returned to the Gizbar and then distributed to the Kohanim on the Ovel. So those are the two models we have. So now this person who has a house, which is in an unwalled city, that he is makdish, which of those two models are you going to follow? You've said so far that he gets all the benefits of Batei Arechoma and all the benefits of Stei Achuza. Well, here, the two models that you have do not release the property back to the original owner. It either goes to the new buyer or it goes to the Kohanim. And that's what the Rav Huna is suggesting over here. Mai Midamitle, either Batei Arechoma Midamitle, if you're going to compare it to Batei Arechoma, Ichlet Le Lelokeach, then it's permanently the Lokeach, because you're already in the second year after he purchased it when the Yovel falls. And at that point in time, he's already had it for 12 months, and it should be his permanently. If you think it's a Stei Achuza, the Kohanim Nafka, then when it comes to the Yovel, it goes out to the Kohanim. It's Nitzchalek the Kohanim. That's what the words in the Pasuk say, Ubi Yovel Yetzei. So here it comes to teach you that a house that is in an unwalled city, that was Mukdash Ayudei the Baalim, then the purchaser of that property from the Gizbar will have that property released when the Yovel comes and returned to the original owner. So here we have a differentiated outcome for the Batei Chatzirim, and that they're different than Batei Arechoma, different than Stei Achuza, in that when the Yovel comes, it will be released back to the original owner. And that's why the Pasuk tells us, Ubi Yovel Yetzei. That's why we have that extra term, which would have been unnecessary, because we already compared it to the Stei Achuza. And by a Stei Achuza, if it's Mechira, of course it goes back in the Yovel. So we say, if we don't need it for Mechira, let's use it for Hakdasha. And in Hakdasha, now we have a rule that if the Yovel comes, it will be returned to the original owner. Matkivla Rav Zira, my Iria Ge'alo Acher. Why does it have to be that a third party buys it from the Gizbar? Afilu Golo Ge'alo Nami. Even if nobody buys it from Hekdesh, the Pasuk says, Ubi Yovel Yetzei, that it goes back in the Ovel. So even if the Gizbar never monetizes the field, never sells it to another party, maybe it should go back in the Ovel to the original owner. Samalei Abaye, Shelo Yomru, Hekdesh Yotzei, Velo Pidyon. It's in order that people will not come to the wrong conclusion and believe that you can have Hekdesh be released without redeeming it. So now, that's interesting because that sounds like a Gzeirah, and that's exactly what the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, that it is a Gzeirah, so that people do not say that Hekdesh is released without payment. Therefore, we need to have a third-party buyer come in here before it's released to the owners in the Yovel. But Eino Chanami, from the sounds of it here, had it not been redeemed, it should go to the owner without redemption. But we, for purposes of the Gzeirah, so that doesn't look like Hekdesh is being released for free, we require some form of pidyon, and that's why we need a third-party buyer in there in order to trigger the Yovel, allowing it to return to the original owner. But then the Gemara goes on to say, Minolan. How do we know that that's true, that we worry about this issue of Hekdesh Yotzei below Pidyon? And now it's going to make it sound like that this is a Din Deoraita, because it says, Mi Ben Levi. We can learn this out from a Levi. Ma Ben Levi, Shefe Kocho Bemim Karo. When it comes to a Levi, when it comes to any property that he sells or has a transaction with, he has the upper hand, because he has a Gulat Olam Tia, that he has a permanent right to redeem it and always gets it back. But when it comes to Hekdesh, if he's makdish his field, they don't lose their property because they have a right of redemption forever. But on the other hand, they still need to redeem the property at a price. So the Levi, who has the advantage when it comes to transactions, does not have any power when it comes to Hekdesh. Israel, who has the lower hand when it comes to a sale, whereby if he sells a house in a Ir Choma, that sale will be permanent after 12 months. That's not true by the Levi, whereby even after 12 months, he's allowed to redeem the house that is in the Ir Choma. So So certainly he should have no power when it comes to the Hekdesh. So now the Gemara says, V'hatami nolan. And how do I know that that's the case by the Levi? The Tanya, because it says by the Levi, V'atza mimkar. So that's in the Sukkim. Regards to the Levi, it says, V'arei Levim, V'atei achuzatam, Gu'ulat olam tia Levim. That is that they have the right to redeem it forever. So that's why their houses, even in an Ir Choma, have the right to be redeemed. By Sheri Galmin Levim, V'yatzam Mimkar, Bayit V'ir Achuzato Be'Yovel. Then that whatever transaction it is will be released on the Yovel. Ki Batei Ari Levim, Hi Achuzatam B'toch B'nei Yisrael. Because that is their Achuzah amongst B'nei Yisrael. Now the Gemara brings the bright thought, which is, V'yatzam Mimkar, that it will be released. Shomeani Afilo Mitaltalav V'shtarav. Sounds like any transaction that a Levi enters into, the Yovel releases it. That means whether he's buying Abadim, he's buying Metaltalim, he has a documented sale, he's borrowing, everything seems to be released by the Yovel, because it says, V'yatza Mimkar, anything that he has transacted with. Tamalomar, but then we have a qualifier, which is, Bayit Ve'ir Achuzato. It seems to narrow the scope of what's released by the Yovel. So, Ma Tamalomar Mimkar. So then, why does it write the word Mimkar if it's not about any transaction, it's only about a Bayit and a Chatzer? So that's what we learn from that Mimkar, Mimkarav, Yutzei Bechinam, Benekdesh, Yutzei Bechinam. It means that transactions that he enters into are released by the Yovel without any payment, whereas things that he is Makdish do not get released without payment, Ela Bepidyon, rather with redemption. So we see from this Pasuk that the Levi's properties are released back to him on the Yovel. That's the right of the Levi that he always has, a right of redemption, and the Yovel is always in his favor, releasing it to him. That's true when it comes to commercial transactions or transactions with lay people. Then when it comes to transactions with Hekdesh, there it's not released bechinam. There it can only be released if the property was redeemed, whether it was by a third party or by he himself. It has to be redeemed in order to be released to him. So now, by Hekdesh, they still don't lose their property because they have a right of redemption forever. But on the other hand, they still need to redeem the property at a price. So now we see by the Levi where he has upper hand when it comes to transactions. By Batei Arei Choma, he can redeem it forever. Yet by Hekdesh, he needs to redeem it at a price. Otherwise, he can't get it back. It's not released to him for free. So then in Israel, where by commercial transactions, they don't get that advantage, Batei Arei Choma after 12 months are gone from them, then certainly by Hekdesh, they're going to have a requirement that it be redeemed before they get it back. And that's what we said before. Rabbi said that by Hekdesh, you can't have Hekdesh go out without a pidyon. It needs to be redeemed before it can be released. And therefore, by Batei Arei Chatzirim, the Israel can't get his property back until he's had some sort of pidyon. And that's why we said there has to be a third party that bought it off the Gizbar to have it be released in the Yovel. Now from here, it sounds like this is a din min haTorah. And so here we're darshaning the psukim by Levi and using a kal vachomer, which are all logical arguments that would indicate that it's a din d'oraita and not a din d'rabbonon. So you have to say then that a biased statement, shelo yomu ekdesh yosef lo pidyon, is almost like a darshina in time of the cross, giving a explanation for why it is that you need the pidyon, but that's not the reason for why you have to have a pidyon. The reason is because the Torah says you have to do it. Bai is just explaining why the Torah would require such a pidyon. So now the Gemara says, upliga d'Rav Elshayo. And Rav Huna's position over here disagrees with that of Rav Elshayo. Dami Rav Elshayo, akol ayu bichlau. Everything was within the context of Natana Kesef Vekamlo. That once you pay for it, it becomes yours. This has to do with redeeming things from Hekdesh. Once you pay Hekdesh Vekamlo, it comes into your possession. Kishapirei takatu b'stei achuzah, that pasuk, which again, it's not an exact quote of the pasuk, but v'im ga'oli galat ha'sadeh ha'magdish oto v'yasaf chamishit kesef v'efkala v'kam lo. Then it goes into his possession. V'im lo yigalat ha'sadeh v'im achar t'sadeh ish acher lo yigael od. V'ya ha'sadeh b'seito b'yovel kodesh l'ashem k'stei acherem l'akoyin t'ya achuzato. So the pasuk says that when you buy it from Hekdesh, it becomes yours. So then when the Torah tells you by stei achuzah, that the stei achuzah, when the yovel comes, does not remain yours, but rather is kodesh l'ashem, and then it's distributed to the Kohanim. Sadehu deparikle v'nafik the Kohanim. That is that a sadeh that was redeemed from Hekdesh, that alone is released to the Kohanim. Avahanach, the kaime kaime. But any other area of purchase from Hekdesh, whoever purchases, that becomes a permanent sale. And that means that when you redeem something or buy something from Hekdesh, it's yours. The only exception to that rule is the stay achuza. And over here, when we're talking about batei arei chatzeirim, then when you purchase that from Hekdesh, it becomes yours, and it's not released in the Yovel. So that's how he's arguing Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Be'yovel Yetzei comes to teach you that when you're Makdish, batei arei chatzeirim, they're released on the Yovel back to the original owners. Rav Hoshaya says that's not the case. He's saying that whenever you buy something from Hekdesh, it becomes yours. Because the only place where it says it doesn't become yours is in the case of the Stei Achuzah, which says you have to return it to the Hekdesh or to Hashem, and then it's distributed to the Kohanim. But then, Uba Yovel Yetzei Lamali. According to Rabbi Yoshaya, what does he do with Uba Yovel Yetzei? Amar Papa lo nitzrecha ela lemocher bayit bebatei chatzeirim upaga bo yovel b'shana shnia. It's to deal with the case in which he sold a house in an unwalled city, upaga bo yovel b'shana shnia, and then the yovel came around in the second year. L'mai midamitle. Now, how do we treat it? Ila batei arei choma midamitle. If you compare it to batei arei choma, ichat le'lokeach, then the buyer already has permanent ownership over it because a year has already elapsed. Ila steachuza midamitle hashlama boy. If you compare it to a steachuza, you get a minimum of 2 years in the field. And if the ovel comes before those 2 years elapse, then we allow you to make up the 2 year afterwards. That's what we saw before. That if you have 1 year before the ovel, you get the second year after the ovel, even though it's not yours anymore, it's going to return to the original owner, you still get the rights to your minimum of 2 years. So again, by the batei arei chatzeirim, which of the models are we going to follow? We're going to follow the batei arei choma, which says that it's now sold to the lokeach permanently, or are we going to follow the stei achuza, which says that you don't have a right to get it back in the ovel until you've completed your 2 years? So the Gemara says, l'hachi yitzchecho b'yovel yitzeh. That's why you need a yovel yitzeh according to Rabbi Yoshaya, to tell you that in the ovel it's released completely. It has neither of those dinim. It's not like a batei arei choma where the sale is permanent. It's also not like a stei achuza where you get the minimum of 2 years. Yovel comes, the batei arei chatzeirim are released, and that's it. Because we don't have this din of minimum of 2 years when it comes to the batei arei chatzeirim. Where it says, Tanya kavati de Rav Huna, v'tiyufta de Rav Yoshaya. We have a braita that's supportive of Rav Huna's contention, and obviously then is a strong refutation of Rav Yoshaya's position. Magdish bayit batei hachatzeirim. Someone's magdish a house in an unwalled city. Hariz go'el miyad v'go'alo le'olam. You can redeem it immediately, and you can redeem it forever. Ga'ala acher miyad hekdesh, which is the case that Rav Huna spoke about, in a case where a third party is go'elit, redeems it from hekdesh, meaning that the individual is makdish, is bayit, beit arei chatzeirim. Yigia yovel, v'lo nigal. The yovel comes around, and in the original owner does not redeem it from the party that bought it from hekdesh. Chozer lebalim b'yovel. Then it goes back to the original owners in the yovel. That's exactly what Rav Huna had said happens because of Yovel Yetzei. And that's against what Rav Yoshaya said, that any sale from Hekdesh to a third party is a permanent sale with the exception of Stei Achuzah. Here we say that the Braita seems to indicate that this is also an exception, and here the Yovel will return it to its original owners. Alright, next Mishnah. Ve'elohein batei hachatzerim. These are what are defined as batei chatzerim. In essence, what we're saying here is that they're not batei arei choma. These aren't houses in walled cities. So the truth is, we already defined what a house in a walled city is. So anything that's not that is a house that's not in a walled city. So you can't say that the Mishnah here is giving you exclusive information. It's just giving you examples of items that are not called batei chatzeirim, even though they might have some features that would indicate that they were like batei arei choma. Because, as the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, batei chatzeirim mean mashma kfarim she'enem choma. It means a village without a wall around it. It's pretty straightforward what it is. It's an unwalled city that has houses in it, or an unwalled area that has houses. That's very easy to understand what batei chatzeirim are. We don't need a Mishnah to tell you that. Rather, the Mishnah is coming to tell you that there are things that look like walled cities, or look like houses in walled cities, yet they're still classified as batei chatzeirim, and that is shnei chatzeirim shel shnei batim. If you have two courtyards in a walled city, and each of the courtyards has two houses in it, even though there's a wall around it from the time of Yeshua Binun, so despite the fact that this is a walled city, it's not classified as a halachic walled city. In order to classify as a halachic walled city, you need a minimum of three courtyards with two houses each.
Over here, you don't meet that minimum standard. You only have two courtyards with two houses each. Tanu Banan. We have a braita. Mimashma shenemar batei chatzirim. Pasuk says in Vayikra Kafei, Pasuk Lamed Adlef, U batei chatzirim eshen lehem koma saviv, as the arts yechashev gulat yalob, yobel yetze. Batei chatzirim eni udei eshen lehem koma. I don't know that they don't have a wall around them. Matamalomar sher ein lehem koma. Why do you have to tell me that it doesn't have a wall? By definition, batei chatzirim implies that these are houses that do not have a wall around them. So then why does the pasuk say, Asher ein lehem koma savi? Why does it have to tell you that it doesn't have a wall around them? To me, afal pi sheyesh lehem koma, kemi shein lehem koma. What it's coming to teach you is that sometimes even when you have a wall around the city, it's still classified as if it's not a wall around the city. Bekama, and what is that situation? Batim, shtayim, chatzerot, shtayim. That is because the pasuk says there, when it's speaking about it, it says batei, which is in plural, and chatzerim in plural. So batei means two, and chatzerim means two. So that's shtei chatzerot shnei batim. So that's if you have two courtyards with two houses each, meaning the totality of the city is four houses, and even though it has a wall around it, in lehem kol masaviv, it's as if it doesn't have a wall around it. Ve'ema, how do you know that that's the structure here? Maybe it's bait v'chatzer, meaning that it says batim in plural, and chatzerim in plural. If I do that, it means two chatzerim in two houses. So say one house in each chatzer. Because then I have two houses in totality, and I have two chatzerim. How did you know to say that the two houses here are per courtyard, rather than one house per courtyard? Mar says, im kein lichtob rachmana chatzerim. If that was the case, you wouldn't have to write the word batei at all. Just write chatzerim, and you'd know there's two chatzerim, and each one has a bayit in it. B'chitem lichtob rachmana chatzerim, chatzer below bayit mashma. He says, well, if you do that, how do you know there are houses there? Maybe two chatzerim means two courtyards without any houses in it. And so then, how would you even know that minimal information that there are houses there? That's why you need the word batei. The Gemara says, no, that wouldn't be a problem, because how karpaf ikre? Karpaf is an area that usually is fenced in, but for non-residence reasons. You have an area that's designated, delineated, but you're not going to build a house there. You're not living in that area. So a karpaf, which is really a word from the Mishnah, from the Gemara, it's not a Tanakh word. Nevertheless, the Gemara says that the Torah would have used a different term to describe an open area or a courtyard that is not for residence. And the word chatzer, by definition, means that it's an area that's enclosed for living purposes for residence. And so if you just use the word chatzer, I would have known there's a minimum of one house there. So then when I say batei, to say two, it must be telling me that each chatzer has two houses in it, and not one house. And that's why we came to the conclusion of the Mishnah, when you have two courtyards and two houses, it's still not classified as a house in a walled city, even if there is a wall there. Okay, next Mishnah. Israel sherash avi imo levi. Israel that inherits property from his grandfather, but it's his maternal grandfather who was a Levi. So he's getting property in the Arei Leviim, even though he's not a Levi. He doesn't follow this protocol. From the way the Mishnah writes, and the way that Rashi explains it, and the Gemara is going to indicate this as well, he doesn't do like this protocol, means the protocol we've spoken about until now, which is that the regular way that Israel deals with these situations, he doesn't do that, but rather he gets treated like a Levi now. V'chein, Levi sherash et avi imo Israel, in the opposite case, where a Levi inherits his maternal grandfather, who was Israel, enogel k'seder azeh. He doesn't follow that protocol. Shenemar, because the pasuk says in Perkaf Hei, pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vasher Igamen Alibim, Yemtza Mimkar Vay Viyachuzato, Viyovel, Ki Batei, Arei Halivim, Yachuzatam, Betoch Bnei Yisrael. So it's saying here that Batei Arei Halivim, Yachuzatam, Ajei Levi, Vearei Halivim. There has to be both a Levi, and has to be in a city of Levim, Divrei Rabbi. So the Mishnah is extremely confusing here because it twice says that you don't do it with this protocol. So from the first one, it sounded like that the Israel doesn't follow the protocol of a regular Israel, rather follows the protocol of a Levi. Then the second statement says, well, a Levi that inherits his maternal grandfather, who was an Israel, then he doesn't follow the protocol of the Levim. And the reason being, this is what Rabbi says, is because you need both factors. You need to be a Levi. I need a property that's in the ear Levi. So in the case where the Levi inherits his maternal grandfather, who is Israel, then yes, he's a Levi, but his property is not part of the Arei HaLeviim. And for that reason, it would not have the din of Arei HaLevim. But once you do that, that becomes problematic for the first case in the Mishnah. First case, the Mishnah said Yisrael then inherits his maternal grandfather who was a Levi, then he follows the protocol of a Levi. Well, why does that work that way? He's getting property in the Arei HaLevim, but he's not a Levi. So the Gemara will deal with that stira as to how we resolve those two statements in the Mishnah. The Chamim said there's only one qualification here to get a din of the Parshia of Levim, and that is it has to be a property in the Arei Levim. That means that Yisrael, who inherits his maternal grandfather, who was a Levi, then he would have the din of a Levi and had the same rules as a Levi. And vice versa, if you have a Levi that inherits his maternal grandfather, who was a Yisrael, then there would not be the dinim of a Levi according to the Chachamim. Gemara says, okay, Ve'ela Kemat, then who does he follow? The Mishnah began, Yisrael, that inherits his maternal grandfather was a Levi, he doesn't go El Keseder Azeh. He doesn't follow this protocol. And the Gemara says, Ve'ela Kemat, then whose protocol does he follow? Keben Levi. Sounds like from there, he doesn't follow the protocol of a regular Yisrael, but rather like a Levi. V'hadar Tani, and this is what we pointed out, and the next line of the Mishnah was Rabbi's position, Hachi Levi V'arei Levim. And the next piece, he says, well, a Levi that inherits his maternal grandfather was Yisrael, he doesn't have a din of Arei Levim because you need both. You need to be a Levi and to be Arei Levim. So then, how does the first case work there? There he only has Arei Levim, he's not a Levi. So Ema, we have to amend the first line of the Mishnah, that Enu Goel, Ella Keseder Hazeh, that he doesn't redeem it, except like, meaning that he does redeem it, like a Seder Azari, he gets treated like a regular Yisrael, Achei Levi, Varei Leviim, Divrei Rabbi, because of the second line in the Mishnah, which is that you need both to be true. You need to be a Levi, and you need to have it be from the Arei Leviim. In the first case in the Mishnah, you fail because you're not a Levi. In the second case in the Mishnah, you fail because it's not Arei Leviim. And that's Rabbi's position. Now Gemara wants to understand Rabbi's position. Bishlama Arei Leviim, Dichtev. I understand why it has to be a property in the Arei Levim, because the description of the right to redeem by the Levim is qualified, ki bate Arei Levim hi achuzatam, which tells you that that's what we're speaking about. We're speaking about the achuzot of the Levim, and that's what gives you the rights in this scenario. Ve'ela Levi minola. How do you know that you have to be a Levi in order for this to be true? Dichtev, because the pasuk begins, v'asher igal min ha-Levim, that which is redeemed from the Levi'im. The truth is that the Pasuk is somewhat unclear, and that the Mina Levi'im is not clear if that's the subject or the object of the Pasuk. And the truth is, you could read it both ways. When it says, V'asher gal min ha-Levi'im, it could be that you're speaking about a Levi, who's the unspoken subject over here, and the Levi, Asher gal min ha-Levi'im, who redeems from a Levi. So that could be one possible reading of that pasuk, which is a shared gal min ha-Levim, where the Levim are that Levi is the object, and there's an unspoken subject, which is the Levi who redeems from a Levi. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is that min ha-Levim is the subject of the sentence, which is a shared gal min ha-Levim. Those Levim that come to redeem, so then they'd be the subject of the sentence, not the object of the sentence. And now we're going to bring a drusha for each one of those approaches, which is Ashei Igal Min Ha-Levim, Tanya. Ashei Igal Min Ha-Levim, Yocho Levi Mi-Israel, Igal. So you would think that a Levi from Israel would have that right. Shezeh Yafek Kocho, Vezeh Hora Kocho. The reason that the Levi gets the upper hand when Israel purchases a property from the Levi is because he has the advantage of being a Levi versus the Israel, who does not have that advantage. So that unevenness is what creates the rights of the Levi over there. Of a Levi Mi-Levi, if it was a Levi from another Levi, lo, that would not work. There it goes, both of them have the upper hand because they're both Levim. Tamadomar min ha-Levim. That's what the pasuk says, v'asher yigal min ha-Levim. That was the one way to read it, which was that the min ha-Levim are the object of the sentence, which means that there's an unspoken subject of Levim, and the unspoken subject is v'asher yigal min ha-Levim. It's also redeeming it from a Levi, which means that there was a transaction between a Levi and a Levi, and the remainder of the pasuk still remains true, which is that the Levi, who is the seller, still has rights to redeem it permanently, even though he's selling it to a Levi. That was the first way that we read it, which is that min ha-Levim are the object of that pasuk. And that teaches you that Levi to Levi transactions have the same din as the Levi to Israel transactions. But then we have a second limud, which is min ha-Levi'im velo kol ha-Levi'im, from amongst the Levi'im and not all Levi'im. So there again, this is treating min ha-Levi'im as the subject of the sentence. Asher gal min ha-Levi'im, when the Levi'im come to redeem something, but then it says min ha-Levi'im, from amongst the Levi'im. So from amongst the Levi'im who come to redeem, this is the rule. It starts to say that there's a limitation as to which Levi'im can come and do this redemption or have these rights. And that's what it says here. Tamalomar, min ha-Levi'im, lo kol ha-Levi'im, prat, leben Levi mamzer, vinatin. That comes to exclude a case where the Levi is born to a mamzer or a natin, where his kedushat Levi'ah is compromised, and therefore he doesn't have the status of a Levi anymore. And the truth is that it probably would be true of a Kohen as well, because when we're speaking about Levi'im here, we're not speaking about Levi, but we're speaking about Shevet Levi. And Kohanim also have that problem, whereby if the Kohen is a Halal, he loses his status as a Kohen. And so in that same situation, he would also lose these rights. And so now you have from here, Tuli Mudim from the Pasuk. And Rashi claims that if you look back at the beginning here, we brought a Tanya, we brought a Braita. You could read this Tanya as being something completely independent. Or the way Rashi has it, you can see Rashi has a Vav in front of it. It says Utanya. So Rashi sees this as being the continuation of the previous question, which is El Levi Minolan. How do we know that a Levi is a requirement over here? And then the Gemara answered, Ashrei Gamin Aleviim, but never explained that. Vitanya, the Braita, now comes and explains to us, how do we know that? And the way that Rashi explains this is that the latter of the Tuli Mudim in the Braita shows you that Yisrael, who inherited his maternal grandfather, Levi, doesn't have those rights. And that's because a Levi has these rights, but even within the Leviim, there are parties that don't have these rights, and that's a Mamzer and a Natin. Mamzer and Natin, even though he is a Levi, he doesn't have Kedushat Levi anymore because it's been compromised, but he is a Levi, and yet he doesn't have those rights, then certainly a Yisrael is not going to have those rights like a Levi. And that's the proof text for Rabbi's position that Leviim are a requirement for these rules here. It's not only that it be in the Arei Leviim, it's also that it has to be a Levi. And we learned that out from a Kal Vachomer, that if there are Leviim that are disqualified, then certainly a Yisrael, who's inheriting his maternal grandfather, is going to be disqualified from these rules. But Chachamim Omrim, Chachamim disagree and say, in Dvarim Alalu Amurim Elu Barei Leviim, Vajay Levi Lo Amrinan. The only qualification of the Pasuk is, Batei Arei Leviim, Hu Hi Achuzatam, that's the only thing that matters. You're dealing with the properties of Leviim, that's what matters. If he's a Levi or not, does not matter. And therefore, in the case where the Israel inherited his maternal grandfather, who was a Levi, he would have rights over here to redeem like a Levi. And in the opposite case, it would not be true. Where the Levi inherits his maternal grandfather, who had the Israel, he wouldn't have those rights in this case, because it's not a property of the Leviim, even though we're dealing with the Levi in that situation. And obviously, their Chachamim are going to disagree with the Braita's position over here, either the Kal Vachomer that we saw Rashi make, or the Limud from Ashrei Galman and Leviim. If you don't think the Braita is addressing this, it's an independent issue. The fact that the Gemara brought Ashrei Galman to Leviim to tell you that the Leviim are the only parties that have this rule, they're not going to learn it that way, because the Pasuk can be read in multiple ways, and you'll read it in a way that does not give you that impression. Okay, the next Mishnah. Eino sim sadeh migrash, velo migrash sadeh. So the Mishnah takes for granted that you know the information already that are coming up in Parshat Maaseh, that the Arei Leviim have certain rules to them. And that is that they have a rule, first of all, that these are the cities of the Leviim. There are 42 cities of the Leviim, an additional 6 cities of Arei Miklat, 48 in total, which are all classified as Arei Leviim or Arei HaKohanim. Again, it means Shevet Levi, not Levi in particular. And then the Torah there gives a rule with regards to the structure of those cities. It says those cities have to have 1,000 amot of migrash around the cities. And then it also says, then you have 2,000 amot outside of the city that are sadot, that are fields. The way Rashi learns it is that the 2,000 amot is the totality of the area around the city. The first 1,000 amot are migrash, which Rashi calls open area, something without any building, without any farming on it. Is just green space around the city. And then in addition to that, you get another 1,000 amot, which are the fields, which are the farming area around the city. So there's a total of 2,000 amot around the city that are granted to the Leviim. First 1,000 as green space, and the second 1,000 for the working of the fields for their sadot. The Rambam, on the other hand, thinks that there's a total of 3,000 amot. There's the first 1,000 amot, which are the green space, and then after that, there's another 2,000 amot, which are the sadot. And that first 1,000 amot, according to the Rambam, is not green space, but rather, it's like a suburban areas. These are areas that are not like the internal part of the city, but they're areas where there's scattered housing and living over there, not open space like Rashi claims over here. So now the Mishnah says, Enosim Sadeh Migrash, we can't convert farming areas into open space. And as Rashi says over there, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because that ruins the ability to live in Eretz Yisrael, because the Sadeh is essential to the financial capabilities of the people to live there. They need a way to make a living. So if you take the Sadot to make them into Migrashim, they won't have a way to produce or have a financially viable city. Below Migrash Sadeh, and you can't make a Migrash into a Sadeh. Over here, it's a little harder. According to the Rambam, the reason that you can't make a Migrash into a Sadeh is because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, which is that you're turning an inhabitable area, a place where there are small residences, now you're turning it to farming land. So you're actually destroying places where people have residences. So that would be the problem. According to Rashi, you're converting green space into farming space. And Rashi says the problem with that is, Shemachriv et noya ir. It ruins the beauty of the city. It ruins the aesthetics of the city. And the aesthetics are part of the importance of Yishuv of the city. People want to live in cities that have good aesthetics to them. And if you take that away, people are not going to want to live there. But let me grash here. You can't convert the open space into ir, into city space, because, again, then you ruin that green space around it, and you're going to make it tight and uncomfortable to live. Below ir, migrash. And vice versa, you obviously can't make a city into a migrash, because then you're going to be destroying areas of residence, so you're destroying Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rabbi Elazar, v'med v'rim amurim, v'rei ha-Leviim. Elazar says, this din is uniquely associated with the cities of Leviim. Aval v'rei Yisrael, osim sadeh migrash, u'migrash sadeh, migrash ir, below ir migrash. He says that when it comes to Arei Yisrael, none of these apply. You can make a field into green space. You can make green space into fields. You can make open space into cities. The only thing you can't do is make a year into a migrash. You can't make a city into green space. Shelo yachrivu et Arei Yisrael. So you don't end up ruining the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. You don't ruin the possibility of housing being available to people and that there are residences available. Hakohanim v'Leviim mochrim le'olam. They can sell forever. V'go'alim le'olam. And they can redeem forever. Shneemar, so the pasuk, again, these psukim that we've been quoting until now, in Perchapei, pasuk lamed bet, gulat olam tiel levim, that they have a right of redemption forever. Because it says, are levim, but they are chuzatam, gulat olam tiel levim. They have a right of redemption ever. The problem in this part of the Mishnah is mochrim le'olam. What does it mean they can sell it forever? So the Rabbeinu Gershom over here claims that they can sell it forever means, afilu bishnata yovel, atzmo. That they can have rights to sell their properties, even in the Yovel. We saw Machlok between Rav and Shmuel before about selling in the Yovel for Yisrael. What's the din? Whether the transaction goes through and is immediately reversed, or whether it's annulled, the transaction. So the Rabbeinu Gershom claims that the Levim, what does it mean, Mochrim Neolam? Means they can sell even during the Yovel year. Rashi over here quotes such a position and says, Vikashali, says I heard this, but that doesn't make any sense to me. Because the machlok between Rav and Shmuel is equally applicable to the fields of the Levim as it is to any other property that's out there. The same kal v'chomer you can make, which is that something that was already sold is released by the Yovel, then certainly something that is sold during the Yovel should be released. And so then why would you have a differentiated view with regards to the Levim's properties versus that of Yisrael? And he says, Ukhubdumali, he says, I think that the reason it's brought over here is parallel structure to the mission on the previous parak. In the previous pekah, it says about the Levim, makdishim le'olam, v'goalim le'olam. They can be makdish forever, and they can redeem forever. So over here, it gave a parallel structure to tell you also, here, mochrim le'olam, v'goalim le'olam. Mochrim le'olam, meaningless. There's no information given to you. The Levim don't have any more rights than anybody else. It's just parallel structure to the Mishnah in the previous parak, where it says, makdishim and goalim. So here, we're talking about transactions rather than hekdesh. It says, mochrim le'olam, v'goalim le'olam. Now, Golim Neolam is relevant by Batei Arei Choma, where the Levim do have a right of redemption even after the year elapses, where normally for Israel that would be a permanent sale. Over here by the Levim, they have a right of redemption even after the first year. So that's the way Rashi deals with it. He says it's just parallel structure. He rejects the Rabbeinu Gershom's view that you're allowed to sell
during the Yovel, and that's the Chiddush here. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that the Chiddush of Mokrim the Olam is that they have a right to sell it even in situations whereby we would, by Yisrael, have either rejected such a sale or would have special rules with regards to that. We saw that before with the instance that Yisrael sells a field within 2 years of the Yovel. So then the Rambam here says that Mokrim le'olam means that if you sell a sedeh close to the Yovel, then you don't have to have that minimum of 2 years in the hands of the Koneh. Which we said before, if you sell within 2 years, then you get 1 year before the Yovel, 1 year after the Yovel. So he's saying here that that does not apply to the Levim because Mokrim le'olam. They can even sell it a year to the Yovel and they'll get it back in the Yovel and they don't have to give a minimum of 2 years. That's the way the Rambam deals with Mokrim le'olam. Again, Rashi says it's parallel structure. The Rebbe Gershom says that you're allowed to sell it even during the Yovel. Amrei Rabbi Elazar, b'med dvarim amurim v'arei alevim. All of this is true by the arei alevim. Aval b'arei Yisrael lo same, you can do all of this. D'kuli yama miha b'levim lo mishaninon. Everybody agrees that by the cities of the levim that you can't make these changes. Minahani mile. How do you know you're not allowed to make these changes? In the Mishnah, we spoke about the logic for such, but where do you see that the Torah demands that you do not make such changes? Amrei Rabbi Elazar, damakra. Because the pasuk says, "Uste migrash areim lo yimacher kiachuzat olam hu lahem." So their fields in their cities they cannot sell. Kiachuzat olam hu lahem. It's a permanent inheritance for them. So my lo yimacher. What does it mean they can't sell it? Ilem lo yimacher klal. If you're going to tell me that they can't sell it at all, v'aminichtayiv gulat olam tiyal levim. It says earlier there that the levim have a right of redemption forever. Klal. So from there you see they can't sell it. You don't need to redeem something if you don't can't sell it. So the fact that you can redeem it shows you that you can sell it. So then what does it mean, lo yimacher over here? What does it mean you can't sell the stei migrash areihem, the sadot and migrashim of their cities? Ela mai lo yimacher, lo yishane. Lo yimacher means you may not sell it, but may not change it. The word machar sometimes means to change or exchange, and that's what it means over here. Lo yimacher means that they may not change the status of these areas, may not change the sadeh, migrash, and the ear from whatever status it currently has, whatever it's zoned for, you can't change it to the other area to be zoned differently. Levim have a right of redemption forever. Why do I need that pasuk? It says with regards to a stei achuza that is sold, that you have to sell it for which is mispar shneim achar yovel tiknem eit amitecha can be mispar shnei tvot im karlach. And we learn from that that you have to give it for a minimum of 2 years. Yochel av zekein, you would think that a levi has that same rule. Tamalomer gulat olam tiyad levim, that they have a right of redemption forever and they don't have to wait a minimum of 2 years before they redeem it. Vishenemar, another case. Vayas adebet zitob yovel kodesh l'Hashem. When it comes to a stei achuzah that you're makdish and that's bought by a third party from the gizbar, then when Yovel comes, it's released to the Kohanim and Nitzchalek the Kohanim. Yochlav Zekein, you would think the property of the Levi would have the same rules. They always have a right of redemption, and therefore it's not going to be given to the Kohanim. The Levim have a right of redemption and will always be returned to Levim. Vishnemar, now we have a third case. You sell a house in a walled city after 12 months. If it's not redeemed, it becomes a permanent sale. Yachol of Zekein, you would think the same is true by a Levi as well. Tamalomar gulat olam tiyal levim. They always have a right of redemption. Even after the lapsement of a year in a walled city, they still have a right of redemption. So here are three different halachot that are particular to these areas. One is makdish stei achuza, one is selling a stei achuza, and one is selling batei arei choma. All the dinim we see the last two prokim until now. And there, each of those particular halachot is uniquely associated with them, but the Levi gets an exemption because he has gulat olam to levim. Mar says about this, b'shlama hanetarte l'chayay. The two first examples, I understand how you can have such a thing by a Levi. A Levi can be makdish his stei achuza, and I also know how a Levi can sell his stei achuza. El batei arei choma levim mi itluhu. How can you have a case where a Levi is living in a walled city, and he's selling his house in a walled city? And you would have thought that after 12 months it would be a permanent sale. Tamad Lomar, gulat olam tiyal levim, that they have a right of redemption. How is a Levi in a walled city? V'atanya. Don't we have a breita? Arim halalu. These cities, meaning the Arei Miklat and the Arei Levim, enosim otam lo kfarim. You can't make them kfarim ktanim. You can't make them to small villages. As Rashi says over here, because then you can't support the rotzkim b'shogeg, those that kill unintentionally when they run away to the Arei Miklat or the Arei Levim,
They can't seek refuge over there because there's not enough of a infrastructure to support them. So if there's really small villages, it's just not going to work. Below krachim gedolim, and it can't be large cities, because otherwise then the goel hadam could sneak in and kill the individual. They won't be afforded the protection of the city of refuge because it's just there's a certain amount of anonymity that's in a very, very large city by which it won't afford the protection that the individual needs. El ayarot benoniot. They have to be middle-sized cities, but also unwalled cities because they are ayarot and not that which have chumah around them. Amar Rav Kana, lokasha. That's not a problem. Kan shukaf lusof yashav. Kan shiyashav lusof kaf. Depends when the wall went up. Was it a case where the houses were built first and then the wall went up? Or was the wall up and then the houses were put there? And you can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he explains that. Lokasha, kan shukaf chumah lusof yashav. If there was a wall there already, and then they settled the city, let lehu din batere chumah. That doesn't have din batere chumah because you break down the wall. They have a requirement then to dismantle the wall or break the wall. Vosimotan ayirot benoniot, and you make it into a middle-sized open city. Kan shiyashav olusof kukaf. In the case where Levim took the city, it was one of the Arei Levim, and after they had settled it, they built a wall around it, so then that choma makes it into a ir choma or batei arei choma. So that's the answer of Kahana. If it had a wall there already, you have to take the wall down. But if they built the city, and then they put up a wall afterwards, that's not problematic because it started out as a middle-sized city, which is what it should have been. And then afterwards, when they put up the wall, that's fine. But that's how you'll have a city with a wall around it, which is Batere Choma for the Levi'im. Where it says, wait a minute, when you have a situation in which you settle it first and then put the wall around it afterwards, is that called Batere Choma? Vatanyo, Ivabraita. V'ishkim kor beit moshav ir choma. When a person sells his house in a walled city, shuhukaf ulusof yashav. That is a case where the wall was there first, and then you settled it. Because it says, ishkim kor beit moshav ir choma. He puts up a residence in a walled city, which means the wall existed, and now you put a residence in there. V'losh yashav ulusof hukaf. To the exclusion of a case where the residences preceded the wall of the city. Yachol afilu hikifua Yisrael. If a Jew put up the wall, Nemar kan choma, v'nemar lahalan choma. It says here choma. It also says in Dvarim Gimel, choma, with regards to the description of the cities that B'nai Yisrael were conquering, Arim Bitsurot, choma, malalan of dekochavim, afkan of dekochavim. Just like over there, the walls were put up by the non-Jews. They were living in those cities. So it's over here, the walls have to be put up by the non-Jews. Yochal afilu ikifua of dekochavim lachar mikain. So if non-Jews put up the wall afterwards, maybe they have a status of a walled city. Nemar lahalan choma, v'nemar lahalan choma. It says choma there, and says choma here. Malalan of dekochavim kodem lachain. Just like over there, it was a walled city before B'nai Yisrael entered in there. It was built prior to that point in time. Afkan of dekochavim kodem lachain. So over here, it has to be a walled city from prior to that time. Or in essence, it has to be a walled city in the time of Yeshua ben Nun. When Yeshua ben Nun enters the country, the city must be walled already. And it has to be a walled city that already is walled, and then the Jews settle in it. Then there's a yeshuv in it. So now how can you claim here that the answer to our question is, depends when the wall was there. If the wall was there first, and then you settle the city, you have to break down the wall. If it was settled first, and then put up the wall, it's fine, and then it's batei arei choma. That's not true. Because if you settle it first and put up a wall, it's not called batei arei choma. So the Gemara's answer is, Targum Rav Yosef Breid Rav Salo, Chassida Kamei de Rav Papa, explained it before Rav Papa, Kagon, Shnaflu lehen, hain v'migrishem, it came to them along with their open areas, their green spaces. Or in essence, as Rashi says over here, nafal lehen begorau. When the cities of the Levim were distributed in the time of Yoshua, then they handed out the area of the Levim. Those area of the Levim came through a gorau. And sometimes the gorau landed on a city that already had a wall around it. And so then you will have a possibility of having a walled city that's an ear of the Levim. The Rabbeinu Gershom explains it not like that because that would imply that they could intentionally give the Levim cities that had walls around them, which sounds like from here that they have to give them cities that are not walled. And so even if you're doing it through the Goral, they shouldn't have assigned to them or put into the Goral cities that had walls around them for the Levim to get. So he explains it as a case where Levi inherited his maternal grandfather, who was Yisrael, who had a house in an Ir Choma, and that's how you end up with a Levi in an Batei Arei Choma. So then the Gemara says, according to the way Rashi explains it here, that they got this through the Goral. Vaha lemisterinu kaime. So then, if they get a walled city as part of the Goral, don't they have to take it down? Don't they have a requirement to dismantle the wall? So if that's the case, you're not going to end up again with Batei Arei Choma of the Levim. Tosfot asks over here, why does it make a difference if they're going to have to take the wall down? Didn't we learn before by Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi that a Sherlo Choma says that even though it had a wall at the time of Yoshua Binun, if it's taken down, then that wall is still considered to be a walled city. So what does it matter that they're going to take the wall down? So the Balei Tosafot say, Kevan, Shem Ruyot, Shaloi Lehem Choma, since they should not have a wall right now, Lo Tolehem Kedushat Choma Sheyakodem Lechem. Then the Kedushah of the Choma never really takes effect over here. It's as if it never had a wall at all. Which means that since at the time of their founding, from the moment it was founded, the city had the requirement that the wall be taken down, then it never attains the Kedushah, so that by which you, afterwards, if it was destroyed, it would retain that Kedushah. It never got the basic Kedushah, or the core Kedushah, that would allow that to happen. That's how the Bai Tosafot answer. Or the Gros suggests that, Mimot Yeshua Binun Velech. It has to be not just in the time of Yeshua, it has to extend beyond Yeshua's time a little bit. And since over here you're going to destroy it in the time of Yeshua, it never gets a status of a Choma Mizman Yeshua bin Nun. Where it says, Amravashi Itzrich, you need it. You would have thought that until they break the wall down, from the time the Levim got the city, and it was a walled city because it was a wall there beforehand, and now they're settling in the city, they have a requirement to dismantle the wall, but they have yet to dismantle the wall. What happens if a Levi sells his property during that period of time when the wall is still there? You would have thought, Havamina, that it would be a permanent sale. Kamash Malan, Gulat Olam De Levim tells you that that's not the case. So that's the way we're going to explain how you have an Ir Choma for the Levim. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph. Okay, we're beginning here, three lines down on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph. Tarabanan, Kisteh Acherem, Lekoin Tei Achuzato. This is a case of Makdish Steh Achuzah. Matam Adomar, Minayin Lekoin, Shigdish Sedeh Chermo. How do I know that a Kohen is Makdish, a Sadeh that came to him through a Cherem? A Yisrael was Machrim, his property. That property then is distributed to the Kohanim of that Mishmar at the time of the Cherem. Now he got this property as a Cherem, it becomes his Achuzah. So now, how do I know, Shelo Yomar, Hoyo V'yotze LeKohanim, Harehi Tachat Yadi Tehei Sheli. Since in the end it's going to go to the Kohanim anyway, and since it's in my possession already, I should remain in my possession to remain mine. So we already spoke about this. This is a case that the Gemara brought before, and all that we have the Limudim here we've had before, with the exception of why would you think this? Why would you think that you should be able to keep the property? And that's what the Gemara is going to explain over here. Again, we explained when we discussed this case before, it's a little strange because he's been Makdishin. He's already sanctified it, given over to Hekdesh, and yet he's saying, well, it's mine, and it's going to be distributed to the Kohanim on the Yovel, so why don't I keep it? What do you mean it's his? He already gave it to Hekdesh. So there we discussed the possibility of either it's still in his possession, the Gizbar has yet to come and take the property, so he's still resident in there, or he's still in his possession, or we just say that he says, I have his strongest connection or relationship to this field, so maybe I should be able to keep it. Or Tosfot adds the possibility that this is a Kohen from the Mishmar, whose Mishmar will fall out during the Yovel, and therefore he does have real rights here because he's one of the Kohanim amongst the Mishmar that will be the recipient of this land. And so that he does, will get at least a portion of the land. And then maybe that means that he does have rights here or ownership here because he will receive it when it comes to the Yovel. Bidinu, and it's logical. If I have the capacity to take other people's property that they're Makdish and it's distributed on the Yovel, then in my own property, certainly I should have such a right. Tama Lomar, that's what the pasuk says. Vayasadev tzeito b'yovel kodesh l'Hashem kistei acherem. That it is kodesh l'Hashem, and the sadeh will be when it comes to the yovel kodesh l'Hashem kistei acherem, like a sadeh of cherem. Chi malamadu mistei acherem. What do we learn from stei acherem? Miata harzeh balalam made. Stei acherem comes to teach you something about stei achuzah. And ends up learning something from Stei Achuzah. So we learn from the Stei Acherim that just like the Cherim goes to the Kohanim, so too the Stei Achuzah goes to the Kohanim. But then we also have a reverse limud, which is that just like it came to teach you about the Stei Achuzah, it also learns from the Stei Achuzah. And that is, Mekish Stei Acherim Olu Stei Achuzah, Shel Yisrael. That the Stei Acherim has the same din as the Stei Achuzah of Yisrael. Ma Stei Achuzah Shel Yisrael Yotzei Mitachat Yadol Mitchalek the Kohanim, just like the Stei Achuzah of Yisrael, when it comes to the Yovel, after he's been Makdishit, if it was redeemed by a third party, or if it wasn't redeemed at all, then it was released from him and distributed to the Kohanim.
Af stei chermo, yotzei mitachat yado, mitchaleket le'echav ha-kohanim. So too the stei cherem that a kohen got from the cherem that Yisrael made, that property is no different than achuzat Yisrael, and it will be distributed to the kohanim on the yovel, and not that he's able to keep it. Amar mar, shalacharim ani zocheh, midomit. He says, I have the right in other people's property. How do you compare the cases? Hatam zocheh ba'alma, hacha kashokile. Over there, he gets it as part of being part of the mishmar of the kohanim that works at the time of the yovel. That's how he ends up with it. That's how he gets shalacharim ani zocheh. Over here, he's just taking it for himself. It's a very different process. In that case, he is one amongst many that gets it because he happened to be in the mishmar of the Kohanim that worked during the Ovel. So he gets it as one party amongst many of the Kohanim. And he's saying, well, if I get property there when it's other people's property, then my own property that was Mukdash here, the Stei Acherim that he was Maktish, then certainly I should have the ability to take that property. What do you mean take that property? Your rights should be no better than your rights with other people's property. Other people's property, you just get it as one coin amongst many. So to over here, why should you have better rights than any of the other Kohanim? Why should you be able to take it? The Gemara answers, and this is really what the addition is in this part of the Gemara that we haven't seen before, Amar Rami Bar Chama Itzrich. You need that because Sakadat Chamina Obiktiv, I would have thought because the Pasuk tells us, Ish et Kodoshav Lo Yiyu, that when it comes to a Kohen who brings up his Korbanot to the Mikdash, they belong to him. And that even though there are Mishmarot that are serving in the Mikdash, and they get all the korbanot of the tzibur, all the normal korbanot that are brought up, a kohen who decides to come up, he can come up at any time, bring his own private korbanot, and they will remain his. He will keep those korbanot, the orot from the olot, the basar from the shlamim, those will all be his. He will be able to take them, and they don't belong to the mishmar. So you see that sometimes kohanim have additional rights personally when they do some avodah, when they're connected to a particular item. So Hanami ki kodoshov damya. Let us say now that the field that he received is part of the cherem, and now is part of his achuzah, that maybe that's like his kodoshim. And just like when he brings his own kodoshim up, they're his. So do this field will remain his. My says, midomi. How can you compare the cases? Kodoshav lav birshuto. When it comes to his kodoshav, they're not in his possession. They don't belong to him. As Rashi says over here, lav mikoach didei kashokilu. The reason that he gets the rights to the korbanot that he brings is not because they're his and they belong to him. He puts them on the mizbeach and he gets that possession because he put them on the mizbeach and the kohen that does the avodah is the one who gets the right to whatever korban it is. And so he is mishulchan gavoa kazochi. He's getting it from a kodesh baruch hu, from the shulchan a kodesh baruch hu, but he attains that right because of the avodah that he does and it's granted to him. It's not that he really has ownership. It is that is, we'll call it, quote-unquote, the reward for his avodah, is that he's given this item. But over here, the actual property is in his possession. He's not getting it from Mishulchan Gavoa, but rather, he's getting it because he owns it. It's his field. It was given to him as a Stei Achuzah. And then from the din of Kodoshim, by where he is, Zochem Mishulchan Gavoa, you're trying to now indicate that you would have a Hava Mina, that this field should belong to him fully? We don't have ownership like that. This is all Mishulchan Gavoa Kazochi. He's trying to take full ownership of this, meaning that it'll be in his possession and never leave his possession. Why would you ever have a Hava Mina like that? We need it. That when it says about the property of the Levi'im, in general, Shevet Levi, that their property is an Achuzah forever, this Stei Acherim that he got from the distribution from someone who is Machrim, their field, now it converts into the achuzah of the Kohen. That's what happens when it's distributed to the Kohanim. So haminami achuzati. That field now becomes an achuzah of the Kohen. And in becoming an achuzah of the Kohen, maybe it's subject to the rule of ki achuzat olam ilahem, that it permanently is their achuzah, therefore they have permanent rights to redeem it. Unlike the Israel, where he's makdish is the achuzah, it's distributed to the Kohanim on the Ovel. So maybe the Kohen's property would not be subject to that because he has a rule of Achuzato Olam Hilahem. Kamashmalan, Achuzato, it says Achuzato, his property, his inherited property, Achuzato in Chermolo. That's only if it's his inherited property from his forefathers, not where it becomes his Achuzah through Cherim, where the Israel that made it into a Cherim, that whereby he's then granted the rights to it and it becomes his Achuzah. That's not the type of Achuzah we're speaking about here. The Achuzah that we're speaking about here is real inherited property from his father, the Kohen. That property is achuzat olam ilahem. That remains a permanent achuzah for them. That's something that cannot be compromised or taken away. for that field that came to him through a cherem, which was not his ancestral lands, that can be subject to the rules of Hakdasha and distribution to Kohanim, and therefore he would not be able to keep it. Meaning that his property here is not treated like a Huzat HaKohanim, but rather like the Pasuk tells us that the Cherem of the Kohen is treated like an Achuzat Yisrael. So yes, it is an Achuzat, but it's an Achuzato in the sense that it's like a regular Achuzat of a Kohen, a regular Achuzat in Levi, that has the rules of that you can redeem it forever, but rather it has a din like Achuzat Yisrael, which has a limited capacity to be redeemed, and therefore properties that are not part of the ancestral inheritance of the Kohanim and Levim don't have these special rules. With that, we end the Perek and finish the Masechta. Hadron Alacha Mo'echer Sadeo, Uslik Allah, Masechet Arachin.